I like to play me latest chart topper. It's called Me Fans Are Stupid Pigs.
The following training video contains performances by highly trained professional criminals.
I think the message to psychos, fanatics, murderers, nutcases all over the world is do not mess with suburbanites because, frankly, we're just not going to take it anymore.
What are you doing out in the middle of nowhere?
Well, I had to get that there crossroads last midnight. Sell my soul to the devil.
What did the devil give you for your soul, Tommy?
Well, he taught me to play this here guitar real good.
Podcasting live from the Nuthouse basement down by the river across the street from the water treatment plant in lovely Lawrence, Kansas. You are listening to Sunglasses After Dark. My name is Nick. This week's podcast should be interesting because people are doing laundry. We have people taking showers. The dehumidifier is running down here. The air conditioning is running because it's humid as fuck outside. And we've had like a couple visitors today. So this should be interesting. I'm curious as to what the background hum sounds like. In case you didn't know, this recording studio is actually my basement. I say it in the intro to the show. It's, you know, Nuthouse basement. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, I'm legitimately underneath my laundry room right now. I am almost directly underneath the dryer, which is running. So anyhow, we have a lot of new music for you. I've actually had a ton of LPs show up before I recorded this, and I don't have time to get to them and listen to them and determine what stuff it is. So you get old, new stuff, for whatever that's worth, as well as an interview with poet, artist, and all-around interesting guy, Charlie the City Mouse Fasano. That's in the middle of the show, but let's get it started with music, shall we? We're going to start it off with music from Dark Ages, from their Vicious Lie EP on Cowabunga Records. This is Non-Productive / Negative.
We'll be right back.
From their most recent LP on P Trash Records, entitled Rest in Pieces, that was the Panic Beats with Night Like This. You know, in my interview, I mentioned the fact that it seemed like this was going to be the end of a cycle. Dale from the Panic Beats emailed me, informing me, like, the stalking and killing will continue. They've got a new EP coming soon entitled You're Next. Before that, was the Hollywood Squares with Hillside Strangler from Killed by Death number 1. There are two songs about the Hillside Strangler on there. The other is the Child Molesters' I'm the parenthetical Hillside Strangler, and I think the Hollywood Squares one is so much better. While we played the Nightbirds on the last podcast, that was from their Maimed for the Masses EP. The new full length is out now, as I'm sure anyone who listens to this podcast is very well aware, out now on Grave Mistake Records. It's entitled Born to Die in Suburbia, and that track is Villa Obscura. And we started everything off with We started that set off with Dark Ages doing Non-Productive / Negative from their Vicious Lie EP on Cowabunga Records. According to things that I have seen on the interwebs, from Jordan Carr, frontman, on his Instagram feed, Dark Ages are recording their new LP, or are in the process of doing so. So you've got that to look forward to. Now, this group may not have a new release so to speak. But they do have a reissue of this album. It's the 20th anniversary reissue on Crypt Records. We had an interview with frontman Eric Davidson on the blog a couple weeks ago. Let's play some music. This is the first track on New Bomb Turk's Destroy Oh Boy, and it is entitled Born Toulouse-Lautrec.
Yeah.
From the soundtrack to the film Get Crazy, that was Fear with Hoochie Coochie Man. Interesting fact, evidently Get Crazy will never be released on DVD. I guess the master soundtrack tapes are totally jacked and they're licensing troubles and everything. So that is like one of those movies that's amazing. And it's got like Lou Reed in it, and it's got like all of these great character actors, and it's this quintessentially like weird 80s movie. And it's fantastic and funny, and you can find, you know, bootlegs pretty easily on BitTorrent, but good luck finding, you know, anything close to it, you know, like a really high quality copy, unfortunately. The best you're going to do is like a VHS rip. Thankfully, the soundtrack is pretty readily available on LP, so do track it down. It's got some interesting stuff on it, not the least of which is Fear doing Hoochie Coochie Man. Before that, we had Bad Guy Reaction by Gas Huffer from their Washtuckna Hoedown bootleg 7-inch. It's three live tracks recorded in 91 or 92. We had new music from Sonny Vincent, formerly of the Testers. That's from his Totally Fucked single on Oops Baby Records. And that track is Robot Radio. He is on tour pretty much constantly. I missed seeing him at the 8th Street Tap Room a few weeks ago, and I'm pretty bummed about it. Evidently, it was a fantastic, fantastic show. I guess he's got a great backing band. And, you know, Mr. Vincent himself is no slouch either. And we started everything off with New Bomb Turks doing Born Toulouse Lautrec from Destroy Oh Boy, not from the recently released 20th anniversary record, but just from the original pressing. Okay, up next we have an interview with poet, artist, raconteur, Charlie the City Mouse Fasano, via Denver, via Chicago, via now Ithaca, New York. He was kind enough to do a phone interview with us after work one night. It was a Friday or a Saturday about 2 weeks ago. I was very tired. I was slightly drunk. And it's definitely a fantastic discussion, regardless of my inability to maintain any sort of semblance of normalcy. So let's get to that interview, shall we?
I know you've moved around the country a bit. I know you've been in Chicago and Denver and now Ithaca. Like, how do you maintain like sort of a presence in any sort of given city?
Just go out and start doing it, I guess. Yeah, I just start like finding who does what, and you know. In Ithaca, actually, Ithaca's been kind of my workplace where I haven't really done a lot of readings at all. It's been kind of nice. Like, I try to keep it limited on how many gigs I do so I can, you know, do the lino cuts. And it's kind of a nice workplace to kind of get away from doing the gigs for a while. I needed a break. I was doing a lot. So.
Like, too many gigs?
Yeah. After a while, like, in the same town, doing too many, like, readings at shows and all that, I was getting a little burnout in Denver. So in the last year, it's been really nice just kind of like hang out, record and write and work on being an artist for a while instead of a performer, you know. So
that's sort of the interesting thing that I've noticed, is that over the last couple of years, is that in addition to your writing and your performing, is that you've sort of branched out into this whole linocut like artistry thing.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. It's a like a newfound passion for me. I really enjoy it.
Now, where did this all come from?
Well, we moved. Me and my fiance, we met, and then she says, you know, she was like, I'm going, if you want to come to Chicago with me, after we had dated for a while, she's like, I'm going to get my master's. And then we moved to Chicago. The recession hit. So I had, like, I couldn't get a job in Chicago doing anything. It was ridiculous. So I ended up going out and buying a little cutting tools. After I was unemployed for a period of time, I was like, God, I got to do something, you know. And I kind of ran into a wall with my writing. So I kind of started getting into printmaking, and I went and got the little, you know, this little starter kit for doing lino cuts and a couple blocks. And I just started, like, falling in love with doing portraits of different people. And I looked through newspapers and old books and old gangster novels and stuff, and looking at illustrations and stuff like that. And I finally, like, I was just like, hey, I'm going to try it. And I've never really done visual art before other than taking photographs and different things. And I just started practicing and getting better at it. And I really fell in love with it. And it's one of those things where it's kind of an integral part of my process now, where it's, I, I'll write, and then I run into a wall with my writing, and then I'll just start taking images and kind of applying them to the poems once I run into kind of that writer's block point, you know?
Now, I recall that, like, some of your first lino cuts were, like, there was a lot of luchador imagery and things like that. Where did that come from?
Oh, me and my brother went to on Cinco de Mayo at this bar down the street from where we live. They did a lucha libre, like drink all day Cinco de Mayo lucha libre matches type of thing.
Oh, awesome.
And they did it behind the Red This Mexican restaurant called, I think it was called El Diablo. It's closed since then. But I just started taking photos, and then, yeah, I was like, God, I love this stuff. And out of honor of, like, these guys, all the guys that were the wrestlers, my brother told me, like, a lot of them just, a lot of the dudes that were the wrestlers just worked in kitchens around town, and especially at the El Diablo. And I was like, oh, this is great. Don't quote me on the name. I don't even know if it's the name. But they're really nice people. You know, I met some of them, and my friend was actually the promoter of the event. And I just started taking pictures and stuff, and I was like, God, I'm amazed. These guys they just do that on the weekend, you know? And it was, I just got inspired by them because we kind of met them, and we got to go backstage, you know, in their little dressing room. And before they let us in the dressing room, it was as of, you know, as it goes in Lucha Libre, like, everybody was like, we can't come in and take pictures until we all put our masks on. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of fascinated by, like, they followed the rules. These guys are totally into it, and they do it all over Denver. And I just started snapping pictures and kind of filming them, and, yeah, it was like, I just got fascinated with it. And I kind of like how it translated into the lino cuts.
Yeah, the imagery from it, it's very sort of distinct. Like, everybody sort of recognizes that sort of Lucha Libre imagery. And
yeah.
It's kind of interesting that you went to Chicago after Denver, because Chicago has also kind of got, like, a rich wrestling history as well.
Yeah, I didn't explore that when I was there. It's so funny. I just worked on little portraits, and I kind of would do these kind of wood blocks. I started doing the, I couldn't afford the lino cut, like the linoleum to carve into. So there was a construction site behind my house. So I'd sneak out there and, like, grab a bunch of 2x4s and just whatever 2x6s and stuff. And that's where I started, like, carving into stuff and kind of learning how to do it. And then by the time I got back to Denver, the Lucha Libre stuff, I was just, like, on fire for it. And I was like, this is probably the best way to do it, you know. So I just started working on that forever. And once we moved to Ithaca, I worked on most of that here. So,
did you find that the visual imagery and having something to accompany it, did that sort of reinvigorate your writing?
Yeah, because I've always tried to find a way to kind of... I always say this to people. I'm like, poetry has turned into something that I think a lot of people are intimidated by. Because a lot of people, you have to... When you go through high school or junior high, you read Thoreau, you read Wordsworth, you know, you read the standard poets that a lot of people can't relate to, and a lot of people quit having their interest in poetry stops because they can't relate to somebody that lived, you know, 150 years before them.
Right.
And you don't, at that age, you don't necessarily get introduced to people like the Beatniks or Rimbaud, you know, because it's a little too racy for what you're studying, and they probably a lot of times they can't do that in high school. So.
Right.
My interest personally, like, you know, started after high school, and I started getting into it, and I could pretty much explore how I wanted to, you know, who I wanted to read and all that. But a lot of people just stop because they don't understand it, and a lot of people I know that I've read for, like, in front of, have come over and been like, oh my God, I this is poetry. This is I really like this. I can relate to it. You know. So I was always trying to find a way to bring people that have that kind of attitude toward it. And it's a lot of people in the rock and roll, like rock and roll fans and stuff that would come to the shows, because I did a lot of shows, like readings at shows and opening up for all kinds of bands, you know. And after a while, like when I found the lino cut thing, and then I started doing film and like little short films for myself with like really bad cameras, I got really excited because I'm like, oh my God, I can do everything but make people smell what I'm seeing in my head when I write the poems. And hopefully in the future, I don't know if a lot of my poetry people would want to smell. There's some really rank little characters and different things, but I'm excited about presenting kind of a thing where you can hear me read with a band and then, you know, show you images of things and then show you moving images. And I like to do things a little abstract, you know. And I've been really excited in the last 2 years, probably 3 years, about sharing what I think in my brain when it comes out to the, you know, it comes out as a poem. I can show people exactly what I was thinking at the time, kind of thing. So it sheds a layer of different senses, which I've been so excited about doing. You know? And a lot of the people, the artists I've collaborated with, they're really excited about it because I could show them what I'm thinking. You know, when I went to Memphis last week, I recorded with Lucero, and we're all sitting around talking. I've been friends with them forever, and they're like, they know how I am. But at the same time, I was like, no, I recorded this poem with them about an old bowling alley that was about to be knocked down. And to get everybody going and start thinking about it, I laid out some of the block prints that I had been working on, and everybody got like really interactive and like, oh, I remember this and that, you know. And it created a sense of excitement and understanding between everybody. And then I'm like, oh my God, this is going to translate great to people that are going to actually see this release in the future, because it's going to be, you know, an illustrated book, just like the one I sent you with Lucero. And I was just so excited that I watched my friends, who I've known for years that didn't know this side of me, get super excited about it, knew exactly what I wanted. You know what I mean?
Right. So, like, what I find really interesting, especially about the most recent book, is that, like, there's a portrait with every poem that you have, and
mm-hmm.
like I've noticed that over the years that your poetry very specifically works on imagery, and like every poet tries to paint a picture of what they're speaking about, but mm-hmm. like yours deal very much with individuals and sort of like people's stories. The one
right.
that I always sort of pick out and sort of talk to people about is the one about the soda machine next to the adult bookstore.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people like that. I love it.
And,
I love that people like that.
And that's sort of like a very sort of personal, like a very good story, but like... I'm curious as to, with the new book, like, how many of those are stories that are fictional, and how much of those are adaptations of things that you've heard?
Well, a lot of them are composites, because I always write public transportation, because I haven't had a license since I was, like, 22. So, like Chicago, writing the Blue Line. I always rode the Blue Line every day, or the Orange Line. And you just sit and you see, walking through those stations, you see so many faces.
Oh, yeah.
And then you see so many faces and people doing strange things. And then you see them, like you see redeeming value out of things, and then you see strange, and then you kind of see absolute evil out of people. And I kind of like a lot of those characters in that book, and Not Good With Names, they're composites, you know, and then some of them are spot on, you know, like the one about the guy that I called Bitch Boy. That was a guy I worked with, and he was really proud that he was a prison prostitute. So, and that was kind of, I worked with him on a construction site, so I kind of thought about how I could place him if he rode the bus, you know, stuff like that. So I'd fictionalize their time and place, but I'd say maybe 20% is real, and then a lot of it's real, but totally composite, you know?
Are the images composites as well, or did you find, like, certain faces that worked well with the stories you were telling?
Right, yeah, you're correct, yeah. I'd say that what you just said is, yeah, pretty much, yeah. I tried to find a face that either I would remember who I'd, or I'd photographed, or maybe I saw in the background of a, in a movie as an extra, or, you know, certain things. Like, sometimes extras, you watch extras in, like, independent movies that are really bad. They're doing, like, they're acting natural, but they look like kind of an asshole, you know? You know what I mean? Like, you always find these little moments in, like, different movies or even documentaries. As soon as, like, even that, that face or the expression somebody makes when they know they're being filmed.
Yes.
That's kind of, like, sometimes I kind of got, I got turned on by, like, doing that with those lino cuts, because some of them have that look. And then some of them kind of have the look of just, like, yeah, you can look at me and they smile. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of idea. So it's a big pile of ideas that went into that, and it's, I would say a lot of it's a composited thing, you know, but I would say that I put a lot of my experiences in talking to people and seeing people on the train in Chicago or on the bus in Denver or on Colfax, or, because Colfax in Denver, I don't, have you been to Denver?
No, I haven't.
Like, Colfax is a 36-mile long, like, continuous strip of commercialism.
Oh.
And it's got its high end, where it's just like regular people, and then you have the absolute seedy end of thing of life, like crack addicts and pimps and all kinds of things, and it all goes along on this strip, and people interact with each other in that way, and you have aggressive people and total weird, you know, crazy people. And I kind of, you know, over the years, I've been working on that Not Good With Names probably for like 5 years. And over these 5 years between Chicago and Denver, and being able to travel and do shows and, like, read it in different cities, I kind of, they all just went together like a deck of cards. You know what I mean?
He's as Hollywood as Kansas City can get. He's the singer. He's in a rock band. His cologne sounds expensive, but he smells like Bud Light. He says his hair feels dry and lifeless. He wants a salad for dinner because he wants to wear a tight shirt on the Tonight Show. The label wants him to work on his grammar. The label wants him to dress more like an idol. The label just wants him to be comfortable. Because he's the singer, he's in a rock band. The band has a photo shoot in the morning. He's going to stay in tonight and work on his skin. He just bought new contact lenses that make his eyes look misty all the time. He needs to practice puckering, lip glossing, eyes shadowed looking into the distance, getting deep and looking mysterious. He needs to practice the squint and sneer the label says sells. He's the singer. He's in a rock and roll band.
Now, in terms of music, like, you've had your, just like in terms of like things you've done with Fast Geek Press and just your own personal readings, you've worked with like a interesting sort of cross section of like the punk community and things like that. Now you've been down in Memphis recently recording with Lucero. Like, what's that project like?
No, it's great because we did the 7-inch. Were you familiar with the 7-inch we did like 7 years ago or something?
Yeah.
That was the very first thing I ever did, like recording or released.
Mm-hmm.
And I went on tour with Drag the River 1 year. And back in the day, we went on this probably like a 30-day tour to the West Coast. And we met with Lucero. They were the opening band. And we all met. And we'd share opening slots, you know, it was just one of those things, and I became really good friends with them, and I just thought that going down to Memphis 7 years, or 6 or 7 years ago, was probably one of the more fun things I could do, because I'm so into rock and roll. I'm like, why not go down to the Garden of Eden of rock and roll and record with this young, like this band that's making their way up through the ranks. And we went down, I went down there, recorded a 7-inch, and then I remember when I left, I'm like, let's do this again. So they came, when I moved to Ithaca, New York, about a week after I moved here, they came rolling in and they did a show. And we sat outside their bus and we were all laughing. And I was like, let's do a reunion party like a bunch of old men. So, yeah, we kind of scheduled it between they're going back to Germany and they're always on the road, so it's really hard to schedule time with them. And, like, rolling in with, I just went down there last week. I was like, that was our reunion party. I recorded with the same engineer that recorded the first 7-inch. I recorded with all the same guys. I met up with the same people. We went to the same bar afterwards, you know. So it was kind of like a reunion party. And I just thought that was a good beginning and end to this 7 years right now, because it's just, it's a perfect thing. And all the poems that I recorded 2 poems with them, and they're really, they're memories, you know. One of them's about a bowling alley where at the end of this happy hour it's going to be knocked down, and I just kind of show it as like bowling is a relic of where an average man could be an athlete, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, everybody holds like athletes in the NFL and the NBA and Major League Baseball as the athlete, you know, the median. But back in the 60s and the 50s, or even before, it was like a person could become a neighborhood hero.
Yeah, but you
and have a gut and smoke a pack of cigarettes a day and drink beer, you know.
But if you bowled a 300, you were like a god.
Exactly, and that's what it's about. It's about, the poem's about this god, like this guy that, his name, I can call him Slick Bobby Charles, and he bowls a 300 in 1978, and the end of the poem's about this old guy that remembers being there, and he's raising his half beard at Slick Bobby Charles in his perfect game in 1978. And the guys in Lucero, totally, they understand that, because they live in Memphis. Everything is history, and everything they record has a lot to do with history. And a lot of them, like two of the guys, you know, three of the guys do session work, and they understand the history of rock and roll and music. And I thought the bowling alley thing was great. And then we recorded another poem, and it was about me driving around in the early 80s with my parents when I was like 6 and 7 years old, and we used to drive everywhere and going across the country. And it's a list of images of all the memories that I kind of had driving through, like, Kansas, and you'd see a Stuckey's, you know? Like, just, you know, one of the lines is, like, I follow the wind on the window with my finger along with the telephone lines.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to listen to people's conversations, you know, and it's just this, it gives it a lot, it's a lot of space, and it's a lot of, like, memories about the 80s and how the thing I enjoy about America is the smell of gasoline fumes and watching America move. You know what I mean? And that's one of the main things that I really love about America. I don't like a lot of things about America, but I'm a political person. So it was nice to put that in perspective, knowing that I love my country for this certain reason. It's that you can move freely back and forth, and you can smell gasoline fumes, and you can have memories, and you can be a little kid and have like this huge expanse of wonder about what the world's like. And they really got into that. So it was really neat. It was neat to go back and do that. And then I just enjoy collaborating with people. Like the Mala Madre, that's my twin brother's in that band.
Oh, wow.
And one of the guys the guy that plays the percussion, he's from Costa Rica. And then the guy that plays guitar and some of the keyboard stuff, he's from Mexico City. So I like collaborating with people that are, like, really artists, you know. And it was neat to, you know, it's neat to do that constantly because it keeps me fresh and it keeps what I listen to kind of fresh. I like punk rock. Like, that's punk rock and metal is where I come from. But it's really nice to, like, get away from that and kind of, you know, have people with the same ideals in the same, you know, frame of mind that I'm in, that I get to go and collaborate with them.
Yeah,
does that answer your question?
Yeah, and what's kind
that's
of interesting is that you also like, address, like, despite having, not even despite, but in addition to the fact that you have, sort of, like, a looking at where America was, you do embrace technology. Like, I like the fact that you can scan a QR code and get additional content more than the imagery and the words. Like, that's how you get the music.
Yeah, it's a mobile device. You know, if you do a QR code, you can bring that to the zoo and read my book and listen to it. You can sit in a coffee shop. You can sit on the bus. You can sit on a train. You know what I mean? I like the idea of people can be, if you do it on your cell phone, you're kind of forced to interact with it, you know?
Yeah.
First, like right there. You don't have to go home and put a CD in into your CD player. You don't have to have your laptop out to watch it or listen to it. You know, I want people to be able to, like, do it wherever they are. And a lot of people have, like, smartphones now, and they're becoming cheaper. And I just like the idea that anybody can afford that technology, which is going to be widespread. Everybody's going to be able to afford it pretty soon and be able to have one of those, you know. And not everybody, but more widespread access.
The majority of people, yeah.
Yes, and it's kind of cool that if you can't do that, I've always put, like, things when I send people books. I'm like, if you don't have a laptop or a smartphone, let me know, and I'll send you a CD. I'll send you a burned CD of it, you know. It's like one of those things, and that's why I put my email in there, because it's like, send me an email saying what you want. If you don't have this, I'll find a way for you to experience what I'm doing, other than I can't put it on Super 8 film, and I can't put it on, you know, 2-inch tape or any of that kind of thing. But I'll try to get it to you, you know. And I like the fact that there's more accessibility, because not a lot of people like to read the poems, you know. They'd rather just listen to it. So if they have a chance to be sitting somewhere and scan the code, they can listen to it. And usually if people are listening to something and they have the book in their hand, they'll read along, you know. So I'm just opening, I want to open access to other mediums, you know, and, like, have people be able to interact with what I always call my brain movies. You know, I think it's like Tropic Thunder. I got that from that movie Tropic Thunder.
Oh, yeah.
My brain movies.
Yes.
And I thought that totally made sense, because I'm like, that's kind of what I do, you know. And I want people to crawl inside my head. It gives me an opportunity. Technology is giving me an opportunity for people to actually do that, you know.
So what do you have on the horizon?
That Lucera thing, I think. I'm sorry, what?
What are you working on now?
They're mixing down those two recordings in Memphis, and then once that's done, we're hopefully going to put out a 7-inch that will go with a book, an illustrated book of the text from the two poems, and a boatload of lino cuts that I'll be illustrating both of those poems I was telling you about.
Wonderful.
And I think I'm trying to get Roy Berry, the drummer from that band. He's a great photographer. I love his photography, and I'm trying to get him to do a little film for me. It'll be, there'll be QR codes throughout the book just so people can do that with illustrations. So, yeah, that's our next idea. So, I don't know. It'll take a little bit to get all that done, but, yeah, that's my next project.
Cool. Well, that's...
I always try to keep busy, you know. I always, that's what it's about, you know, so.
Well, that sounds amazing, and thanks for taking time on a Saturday night to talk with me, Charlie. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's so funny that I feel like we've emailed for years, and you've done so many nice things, and, like, putting me in the pitch and all that kind of thing. And it's so nice to actually, and then when I've been to Kansas City and Lawrence, you've always been so busy that we haven't been able to actually meet or talk. This is the first time I've talked to you.
I'm glad that we finally had this chance. Thank you so much.
Thank you again to Charlie, the City Mouse Fasano, for taking the time to talk with me and discuss all of the various things. It's really interesting. Like, I don't even recall how I first got one of Charlie's books of poetry, but, man, I'm really glad. I'm not a poetry person by any stretch of the imagination, but I love what he does, and it was great to actually finally get to talk to him. His new book out now is entitled Not Good With Names. You can find that at various places. You can find him on Twitter at The City Mouse, or you can find all of his recordings as well as pick up copies of Not Good With Names at his Bandcamp page. That is Charlie, C-H-A-R-L-Y, thecitymousefasano.bandcamp.com. We'll also have a link on the blog. At his Bandcamp, you can also find a download of the EP from that little track in the middle, which is entitled So Hollywood and Casey Moan, is from an EP entitled Whiskey Won't Cure Clap. I believe that was inspired by Charlie's visit to Kansas City, Missouri a few years ago when he gave a reading at Prospero's on 39th Street. So coming up next, we've got music from the recent repress of the House by the Cemetery soundtrack on Death Waltz Records. This is Walter Rizzotti with Blanc Monster.
Thank you. makes sense. That makes sense. That makes sense. That makes sense.
From their No Idea 7-inch entitled It's On, that was Bitchin' with Goddamn Heartbreak. Found those in a dollar bin. I've always enjoyed Bitchin' whenever I've heard them because they are, well, they're their name. Before that, FYP with Animism from the Cooties EP, and prior to that, new music from Whatever Brains from their third self-titled LP, that's Bellied Up, out now on Sorry State Records. A little more droney, a little more creepy, a little more weird, less Giza X, more, I can't even think of a good explanation, something like Boards of Canada on like a shit ton of like poppers, I guess for lack of a better term. And before that, we started everything off with Walter Rizzotti doing Blanc Monster from the House by the Cemetery soundtrack, and that is a recent repress on Death Waltz Records, one of the many, 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 many fantastic things that that label puts out. We've got one more set of music, and we're going to start it off with a couple local tracks. First up, from their brand new LP on Replay Records, the first long player by that's not a compilation, I suppose, on Replay Records. It's entitled When the Troubles Come. This is Red Kate with Silent Picture Show.
Let's go.
Covering She's Like Heroin to Me, that is from the Shred Your Face Volume 2 7-inch collection. I believe we played a track off that when it first came out. I believe we did fucked up doing the Chain Gang's Son of Sam. And before that, White Girl by X from the Wild Gift LP. We played some Truck Stop Love doing Stagnation from the single of the same name. And we started everything off with Redgate doing Silent Picture Show from their recently released full-length When the Troubles Come, out now on Replay Records. Interesting fact, both Red Kate and Truck Stop Love feature one and only Brad Heumann. There you go. And that is this podcast. We'll have another one for you in a few weeks. I believe we'll have some interesting interviews on that show. I'm not quite sure who it'll be, but I've got my fingers crossed for some interesting guests. Until then, thank you for listening. Tell your friends to download the podcast. Tell your friends with bands, labels, things like that to send me music for review and play. As always, you can find this podcast as well as blogs where I talk about records and books and other tactile ephemera in this digital age of ours at rockstarjournalist.com. Do go take a look. And again, thank you for listening.